The Riparian Ripper by Andrew Cartmell. The Red River wasn't red. It was a sort of greyish brown. The doctor and I walked down to where a bunch of men were gathered on the bank. The men had rifles and shotguns. They would have looked like a hunting party if it wasn't for the policeman standing in the middle of them. He stared at the doctor as he inspected the muddy stretch of ground that ran down to the water's edge.
"It's a pity,"
he said.
"No chance of identifying any prints."
The ground had been very thoroughly trampled over.
"Who exactly are you?"
said the cop.
"I'm Ace,"
I said.
"And this is the professor."
"Professor?"
said one of the men.
"I'm Walter Orpheus, reporter for the Evening Herald."
He left the group and hurried over.
"So, they finally sent someone,"
he said as he reached us, grinning.
"The university finally sent someone. Is that where you're from?"
said the cop, looking at the doctor.
"Yes, a visiting professor,"
he replied shamelessly.
"I've got my credentials here somewhere."
He searched his pockets looking for one of his many fake IDs, but instead pulled out a newspaper clipping.
"Ah, Ace, here we are,"
he handed it to me. The cop wasn't interested in credentials. He just seemed glad someone had shown up.
"You'd better look around then,"
he said. Further up the bank was the rest of the hunting party. The leader was a red-faced man with short white hair and a short white moustache, and another man who looked like he might be his brother, except his face was even redder. This was because he was bent over, coughing. It was a nasty cough, and it went on and on. I read the clipping.
"The Riparian Ripper. Are the banks of the Red River being stalked by a psychotic attacker? This disturbing story began last November, when a city hydro worker, Bob Connors, was performing late-night emergency maintenance work on a drainage duct, and an unseen assailant stabbed him in the abdomen. Luckily, he was able to drive himself to hospital and amazingly survived the attack. The next victim was Elsa Havenhand, who received wounds in the pelvic area before fleeing and receiving medical help from a doctor who lived near the scene of the crime. Again, the traumatized victim was unable to describe her attacker, who had surged suddenly and unseen out of the darkness. The Ripper's next prey was hardly more than a child, little Tommy Spencer, age 9, who miraculously survived a slashed throat received on the night of May the 27th. The brave little freckle-faced boy was unable to offer any description of his aggressor. Being hard of hearing, he wasn't even able to hear the ruthless attacker's approach. Police believe the assaults are all the work of the same individual and fear that he will strike again.
I carefully folded up the clipping and handed it back to the doctor.
"What does riparian mean?"
I said.
"On or of the riverbank." "And will he strike again, the Ripper?"
Walter Orpheus overheard my question.
"He already did. A teenage girl, Dolores Gorman. That's her father, Stan, over there."
Walter indicated the white-haired man.
"And her uncle, Herb."
He pointed at the other man, who had stopped coughing at last. He still looked pretty bad, though, red-faced and breathless.
"They run Gorman Construction. It's a big firm. But they both took the day off to come down here and look for the attacker." "Is she dead?"
I said.
"This Dolores?" "No, thank heavens. She's in St. Saviour's Hospital downtown, in a stable condition."
The girl's father was listening and came over to join us.
"We're going to catch him,"
he told me.
"And when we do..."
He lifted his shotgun. The doctor frowned.
"You're not proposing to shoot this so-called Ripper."
The fierce little man turned and stared at the doctor. He looked like he was spoiling for a fight.
"You bet I am."
"But you don't know anything about it."
"It?"
said the man.
"What makes you think this Ripper is even human?"
The man laughed.
"What else could it be? Some kind of animal?"
The man looked away from the doctor in disgust.
"So, the university sent one of their professors to spread crazy rumors. Animal."
The doctor just smiled patiently and asked,
"Do the wounds look like they've been made with a knife?"
I noticed the policeman look up alertly when he heard this, but it didn't make any impression on the angry little man.
"It's no animal,"
he said.
"It's just some nut using some weapon."
"Some nut using some weapon?"
said the doctor.
"Yes, and when I find him, he's getting two barrels of 12-gauge buckshot. Well,
said the Doctor.
Then I think we're just about done here.
He turned away from the hunting party, and we started up the slope towards the cars.
We need to go to St. Saviour's Hospital,
he said to the cop.
I don't suppose you could give us a ride.
At the hospital, we waited on some folding metal chairs in a chilly corridor. The doctor looked at me and said, does anything strike you about this so-called Ripper and his victims? Anything unusual? It's a different kind of attack each time. I mean, the Ripper goes for the abdomen one time, then the pelvis the next, then the throat. Isn't that unusual? More to the point, in every case, the victim has survived. Just then, the door opened, and Dr. Leonard Milroy showed us into his office. He was a tall, skinny guy with long, bony hands and a nice smile. It turned out that he was not only Dolores Gorman's doctor, he'd also looked after two of the other victims and had case notes for the third. So the doctor was in clover. The doctor asked if any of the victims had been suffering from some kind of serious medical condition before their attack. Leonard Milroy checked the notes and said that Elsa Havenhand suffered from torsion and hypersplenism, whatever that meant. The doctor nodded eagerly and asked if she had a wandering spleen. I had visions of a spleen going for a walk, and I thought Milroy would throw us out. But the doctor wasn't joking. Milroy nodded eagerly back at him, and suddenly they were talking like old friends and colleagues. The doctor kept digging and soon discovered that the brave little freckle-faced boy Tommy Spencer's deafness was caused by infected lymph glands. The doctor said, he was the victim who had a slashed throat, was he not?
That's right, said Leonard Milroy.
I wonder if we could look at his x-rays from after the attack.
Certainly.
It wasn't long before the doctor had found what he was looking for, pointing out an area of the x-ray for Milroy's inspection.
Holy smokes,
said Milroy, leaning closer.
He's had an adenectomy.
What's that? I said.
Surgical removal of the adenoids,
said Milroy. He flipped hastily through the boy's case notes.
Only he's never had surgery.
He looked up at the doctor.
Do you want the films on Elsa Havenhand?
The doctor just nodded and smiled. They bent over the x-rays, pointing and making excited noises.
She's had a splenectomy,
said Milroy.
Don't tell me, let me guess. Surgical removal of a wandering spleen.
Or any kind of spleen,
said the doctor. Next, it turned out that Robert Connor's gallbladder had been removed, and he'd been suffering from gallstones. The doctor just smiled.
So,
he said, counting on his fingers,
we have a gallbladder riddled with gallstones, a wandering spleen, and infected lymphatic tissue. All removed.
And removed with surgical skill.
What about Dolores?
I said. We got an x-ray, and it turned out that Dolores was missing her appendix.
Was she suffering from appendicitis?
Said the doctor.
Not that we know of, said Milroy, but it could well run in the family. Her sister Edith died of a burst appendix when she was 16.
What a pity, said the doctor.
Milroy nodded.
That's one of the reasons her old man is such a hard case.
What are the other reasons?
Said the doctor.
Well, his brother is suffering from end-stage lung cancer. It's amazing that he's still walking around.
I remember the man by the river coughing his guts out and winced. We stayed that night in accommodation at the university. It turned out that the doctor hadn't been kidding about having the proper credentials, and they gave us rooms in the student halls, which were surprisingly comfortable. I was still asleep when the doctor hammered on my door the next morning. I opened it to see him standing there with Milroy, who said,
they've found the Ripper.
Dr. Milroy had a red spinner on top of his car.
For medical emergencies,
he explained. And that helped a lot, clearing traffic out the way.
Herb Gorman was brought into the hospital about 8 o'clock this morning,
said Milroy,
with extensive wounds to the upper chest, thorax and abdomen,
said the doctor, leaning forward.
That's right,
said Milroy.
Okay,
I said.
So what you're saying is that the Ripper... I wish you wouldn't use that name,
said the doctor.
The
He is going around performing operations on people.
Surgical procedures, yes,
said Milroy.
But if you go running around the place slicing people up, even if you're doing them good, there's liable to be a bit of a misunderstanding.
There is indeed, as you can see taking place here,
said the doctor. We had pulled off the main road and were speeding along a narrow tarmac track through the forest. It opened out into a big circular concrete area overlooking the river. There was an orange truck parked there with the words Gorman Construction on the side. Down below us was a big open tunnel mouth set in concrete above the river.
Storm drain, said the doctor. Makes perfect sense. As a place to hide, I mean.
You think our friend is in there,
said Milroy.
Not for long if Stan Gorman has his way.
We started down the slope. Stan was standing there at the opening of the storm drain with a bunch of guys wearing jackets that said Gorman Construction. They were running bright yellow wires out of the drain.
Uh-oh,
I said.
Detonator wires.
Yes,
said the doctor.
Detonator,
said Milroy.
It seems that Gorman Construction has an ample supply of explosives.
Stan Gorman turned to look at us.
Stay back,
he said.
This area is dangerous. Only because you're irresponsibly and foolishly planting explosives,
said the doctor. Never one to mince words.
Irresponsibly and foolishly,
said Stan, his moustache bristling.
Hiding in that tunnel is the monster who butchered my brother.
I understand your brother is doing rather well,
said the doctor.
He was cut to pieces,
said Stan.
That monster was torturing him for hours.
Yes, it would have been quite an elaborate procedure,
said the doctor.
But torture is not the right word.
Well, whatever word you want to use, we've got him now. We found Herb lying out here where he left him. And we know he's hiding back in there somewhere.
Gorman pointed into the tunnel.
We've got him trapped. The storm gates are sealed, and he's somewhere in the tunnel section between there and the river outfall here.
He looked at the yellow wires running out of the big metal pipe.
And you can bet we're going to deal with him. Now get out of here so we can make the blast.
On the contrary,
said the doctor, and he hopped up nimbly and climbed into the mouth of the drain. I saw what he had in mind and hurried to join him. I was surprised to see Milroy following me. Before anybody could stop us, we were all standing in the big pipe. It was about 10 feet high and made of corrugated metal. It looked shiny and new, and there was just a shallow trickle of clean water running through it, which was a relief. At least we weren't going to be mucking around in a sewer.
Get out of there,
said Gorman.
We're going to detonate charges.
Not while we're in the tunnel, you won't, said the doctor. And he led us, sploshing through the storm drain.
Cut the wire,
said the doctor.
Righto,
I said. I felt a lot better after I'd done that. We moved down the tunnel to a sort of three-way junction. The big pipe divided to our right and left. All you could see was darkness down each section. I was beginning to wish we'd brought a torch.
Now, said the doctor, I think we should.
There was suddenly the terrifying, high-pitched whooping of a siren. Milroy said,
that maniac, is he going ahead with the detonation?
He can't. I cut the wire.
And in any case, said the doctor, frowning, the siren isn't coming from the outside. It's coming from down there.
He pointed to the darkness ahead of us. I saw something stirring in the shadows. It was moving towards us, and moving fast.
Look out!
Shouted the doctor. He grabbed me and Milroy and dragged us into the side tunnel to our right.
Cover your ears,
he said. An enormous booming echoed through the storm drain, and we turned back to the main tunnel to see something big and silver streak past us in a fine spray of mist. The noise diminished as the thing shot down the tunnel and out into the daylight above the river. We ran back into the main tunnel. There was water dripping from the roof and splashed high up the walls on all sides from the passage of the ship which had just blasted past us. The doctor was the first back to the tunnel mouth. Milroy and me were right behind him.
We got there just in time to see the silver ship disappear into the sky. Stan Gorman and his men were all staring after it, their mouths open.
I'm afraid our friend has gone, said the doctor.
He reached down and picked up a limp, useless length of yellow wire.
And I can't say I blame him.
Well, that was about it. Dr. Milroy got back to the hospital and found that Herb Gorman was healing amazingly quickly. He was soon returned to full health. His lungs and body were free of tumours. Milroy said he'd never seen anything like the surgical skill and precision of the operation that had saved the man's life. The doctor and I said goodbye to Milroy, and the doctor gave him a present. A telescope. Milroy wants to watch the skies. He's hoping that silver ship will come back. Personally, I wouldn't hold my breath. But then, I'm the one who had to cut the wire on the dynamite.